Calcutta. For Rheem hot water heaters, solar, continuous flow and storage hot water, Rheem is Australia's favourite. Install a Rheem.
Welcome to the Sunday Rub. Triple M rocks football.
Good afternoon and welcome to Aurora Stadium down here in Launceston. Huge game of football today. Can't wait to get our teeth into this one. Hawthorn and Fremantle from down here in Launceston. The team today, myself, Brian Taylor, Wayne Swass is with us, Warren Treadrow is with us, Jay-Z, Jay Clark is also with us from the Herald Sun. We're all looking forward to this game. Our guest today, Brad Scott, of course, from the Geelong Football Club. Talk to him shortly. Jack Redpath, an up-and-comer down at Bulldog Land. And what about the surge they're having at the moment? We'll speak to him. Brett Ratton, one of the senior assistants to Coach Hawthorn, down here today. And Ross Lyon, coach of Fremantle, playing here today, amongst many, many others. Got lots of things to talk about. As I welcome you today, Wayne Swass. Good afternoon.
G'day, BT. Hello, listeners. Really looking forward to this one, BT. If this was at the MCG, we'd have a massive crowd, but it's Tasmania's opportunity. And this is an absolute cracking game to look forward to.
And Warren Treadray joins the Triple M team. Good afternoon, Treaders. You have been around the country this weekend.
Yeah, Thursday night, Port Adelaide, Collingwood. Port found some form off the back of the Phil Walsh tragedy. And last night was in Western Australia to see a very clinical Eagles take care of the Adelaide Crows and an emotional Adelaide Crows by 56 points.
And you're going to describe that in detail very, very shortly. Jay-Z, Jay Clark is with us. Jay, I guess the number one talking point, as we mentioned off the top, was from last night.
It was the chicken wing tackle, and you called it absolutely beautiful on Channel 7 last night, Brian Taylor. We saw the Geelong captain, Joel Selwood, wrench the arm of Sam Wright, North Melbourne's Sam Wright, as he laid on the ground. It looked unnecessary and forceful to me. Now, as you said, Chris Judd got 4 weeks for a very similar movement a couple of years ago, didn't we? And it was a famous thing. So we've had a look at
remind us on the Chris Judd one, where he got 4 weeks, how much damage was done to the player?
Lee Adams had
had sore shoulders to begin with. So I think if he didn't miss the next week, he was sort of in a bit of doubt.
I think he did miss a week.
Yeah. So I think it genuinely did hurt him. It certainly affected him throughout the rest of the game. And Wright was sore last night. You saw that, didn't he? He did have that sore shoulder.
So how do you rate it?
It's not a 4 week game. It's not a 4 match ban. But if you have a look at the AFL's new tribunal guidelines, and this is a new system here, so it's not necessarily apples and oranges with the Judd incident, but intentional, medium, body contact is 2 matches down to 1 with an early guilty plea.
So you think there's no doubt about this? You think that this incident, naturally it'd be looked at, but you think there's no doubt that there'll be a penalty?
Well, it's a shocking look, isn't it? I mean, it was a wrestling move. I mean, Sam Wright is pinned on the ground. He can't go anywhere, and all of a sudden he's having his arm wrenched back behind his back. And, you know, that can do serious shoulder damage. So I reckon intentional, medium body, 2 down to 1, Treaders. What do you reckon?
Oh, I agree. Absolutely agree. And if we worry about the look of the game, we've been arguing for the last fortnight whether Bryce Gibbs should have got done or whether Jay Schultz could have got done. I know, totally different incident, but for me, that's in the ethos of Australian football. Trying to rip a bloke's shoulder out or pin him in a contest and the ball had actually spilled out of that contest, which, you know, to defence the Selwood wouldn't have known. He was on the other side of the contest. It's not a good look. The AFL hates the idea of the look, and he's gone.
I agree. I think it was a deliberate act. Sam Wright's shoulder that is involved in the chicken wing tackle is the one that's strapped, and Jamie McMillan's immediate response when he saw
telling.
It absolutely would suggest that, you know, Joel knew what he was doing. So I'm with both of you. I think 2 down to 1 would be fair. But what it also says to me is Joel Selwood's a very frustrated football player at the moment. He's a man that's had to carry this club for pretty much the entire season. And that's a frustrating act that he's done, because we just don't see that from him.
And Schwatter, his season has been good, but not Selwood-like. And that sounds harsh, but when you're that good, you set a standard that people expect you to do. And he's doing it harder now because there has been no Bartel. You know, we've seen little bits of Motlop here and there, in and out of it. We don't have the depth from the Cats that we've seen over the past, decade or so. And he's now, probably the last 3 or 4 years, has really carried it. Now he's carrying it and there's not too many following him, if you know what I mean. They're still developing and they're not at the level like he is. And the first thing you do, he's up for the fight every week, full credit to him. But opposition teams now go at him, and they're going at weighted numbers, and it's almost like he doesn't have the backup that he's always been used to.
Both coaches spoke about this after the game, but let's hear from Geelong coach Chris Scott.
I had a look at it at the time. The TV were replaying it regularly, and the answer is no. I don't think I have a problem with it at all. He pinned an arm in the tackle. It happens all the time. In fact, the players are coached to do that. So I think that was a very minor incident.
Interesting. It does make you reflect on what we've just said and check what we've just said. But I don't think it does happen all the time, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. We haven't seen that since the Chris Judd action. So it's one thing, one every year. If Selwood... Geelong play the Western Bulldogs next week at Simmons Stadium. Now, we've seen the Cats be beaten by Melbourne down there. Gold Coast nearly beat them. So they're vulnerable down there now. It's not a fortress anymore. And I reckon the Western Bulldogs, off the back of their win, Treaders, would back themselves in, wouldn't they, to knock over the Cats without Selwood, without that linchpin.
Well, they'd back themselves in. For me, that grab... Coaches, nothing to see here, nothing to see here. They absolutely know there's something to see here, let's be honest. You don't train your teammates. You train your teammates to pin a tackle like Bryce Gibbs did a fortnight ago, or 3 weeks ago it is, and Jay Shules did up in Sydney. You don't train them to wrench their shoulder in a different direction.
I thought McMillan worsened the situation for his teammate Wright by coming in and tumble-turning him and almost rotating the shoulder a full 360. Which caused a little bit of extra pain.
Yeah, well, not ideal. But as you said, Schwatter, the immediate reaction then is going to be a siren, a flashing light for the MRP when they look at this on Monday. So he immediately responded, no, that's not on, and they'll have a look at that. And as we said, 2-1. Adelaide is a very admired and respected football club at the moment, Treaders, but we know that Geelong is in... up to their eyeballs of Patrick Dangerfield and have been probably for the past 18 months. And we talk about Selwood and the need, or clearly him needing some help. And you look at Patrick Dangerfield and you put him next to Joel Selwood and you think, well, that lightens that load that we've been talking about. So how do you see that situation at the moment? I know it's a very sensitive one. Obviously, they've been through a horrible time. But do you look at Selwood and think, well, Patrick Dangerfield is just the perfect co-pilot for him down at the Cattery?
Oh, he is. He's a perfect co-pilot for any team in the competition. The reality is he's from Moggs Creek, which is not far from Geelong. He's always talked family. He's now engaged to be married. He want to have his own family. And when that happens, more often than not, a lot of players want to be around their families and extended families.
Do you think the deal's done in principle? Oh. I mean, we know that obviously both teams are saying it's not done, but do you think in the minds of Dangerfield, his manager and his family, the deal's done? And Geelong?
I sit back and think of it before the Phil Walsh tragedy happened, the last fortnight or the last 10 days, this was the biggest story. Nine News in Adelaide, which I work for, was about it. What's Dangerfield doing? Where he's at? The way he's talking? He's got a regular media commitment in Adelaide. He's only got one. He's cut back his Nine News Adelaide agreement. He's cut back his Advertiser News Limited agreement to clear the air. He speaks once a week on radio and he stays away from all these issues. So for me, it looks as if he's sitting back.
Clearing the paddock.
He's just sitting back and making a clear-cut decision. But I look forward and I have to say, if you're going to make a call... Going back in the off-season last year, clubs would be into it. And I know a number of players, and I won't mention names, that free agency was almost decided 12 months out. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen so far. So if you're going to make a call, Brenton Sanderson gets sacked. The team misses finals for the second or third year in a row. The form wasn't playing great. Dangerfield had a pretty good season. He's going to get off. He's going to get ideas. And Paul Connors is as good a manager as anyone. You'd have ideas and opportunities right there and then to commit to. And if you're going to move, you're going to know that you've got something locked away, or you've got subject to a trade can be found or free agency you enter. So I look at it this way and go, Adelaide's chance, with the tragedies of the past 10 days, they're going to find a hell of a lot harder to retain him because they're going to have to put a coach in before the season's end, which is probably unlikely. And Dangerfield is going to have to make a call before then. Mm. How do you make a call to stay with a club unless you're just going to go, I'm signing with the club and I'm going to back the right people to get the right person? Because you want to make a call on who's coaching you.
It's a great point. You see him last night. I'm going to get to it later. He's in tears leaving the field with the Adelaide Crows play. So he obviously had a huge attachment and admiration for Phil Walsh. But you think it's possibly this is a reminder that he wants to be even closer to family. You want
Let's
to cherish
honest,
the people
he's
you love.
Coming. He's going to Geelong. I mean, I just think mentally the deal's done. I think all the body language points to that. I think the Phil Walsh tragedy...
He reaffirms
has confirmed in his own mind that going back's probably a good time. I think it's done. I think it's done. I think if you were to get Neil Barm and put him on the lie detector test right now, I think he'd say, yep, I did the deal. wouldn't you? Wouldn't you think that's happened?
I think he would. I mean, he's now at Collingwood and they've got to interest. The Derek Hine confirmed they've got the cash, the salary cap space, yep. And there's some talk behind the scenes that Hawthorn might be having a double as well. So it'll be interesting, but you'd think Geelong with a hometown
the
location.
The word around Adelaide is that the deal was done in the off-season, but no one will confirm.
And you can't. The rules don't allow it. Just while we're in match review and we're talking Chi Wing, Vickery Jamieson.
Yeah. Oh, gone. Yeah, head contact. He elected to bump and unfortunately knocked Michael Jamieson out in the process. So if the MRP is going to be consistent, which you would expect, he's going to be sitting on the sidelines for a week
or two.
What's
your grading?
Jamieson didn't play the rest of the game, fellas, so it's got to be medium at minimum, possibly high.
Is it possibly broken jaw?
They're assessing that. Yeah, well, we haven't had that confirmed, but they are looking at his jaw. So concussion plus jaw.
Clubs and AFL sees medical report, and they go out sub concussion,
red light,
head contact, write yourself off.
Yeah. Petrie last night, little swinging lefty or righty or no, didn't see it.
I didn't see that one, BT, I must admit. I was doing
the
dishes.
That'll
be
reviewed, BT.
That's what I
just
saw
putting
it
on the agenda.
It was way off the footy. And he gave him a little, I can't remember whether it was the left or right, but he got, caught him flush without a lot of force.
Yeah.
It must be said.
Well, if it's low force, if you categorise anything low force, it can be one down to a fine.
Well, that's where it starts, I think. It starts at one down to a fine. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with Big Drury. By the way, just on last night's game, and I know we're going to be speaking to Brad Scott on the other side of the break. What did you make of the game? Jay-Z, Swatter didn't see it.
Well, Brad Scott had been missing for the past month, and North Melbourne had been firmly under the pump because they'd not just been losing by little amounts, they're getting blown off the park. So they had to respond against the Cats last night, and I thought we saw some of their leaders really step up. So
they were aggressive last night, which they haven't been consistently.
I reckon the tone
led by Jared Waite.
Yeah, I didn't see the game. I was coming back from interstate. I reckon the tone was set during the week because Brad Scott's press conference was very surly to the media during the week.
What about
very
his angry statement with the sub, Brent Harvey?
He was strong.
Comment was post game. He's not doing what we asked him to do, and if he's not listening, I'll show him the reason why he has to listen to me.
And
you're
then
in a subs vest.
And then on top of that last night, so this is a guy that's playing his 398th game, right?
Yep.
And is apparently in talks with the club at the moment about next year and the possibilities of going on. So then he gets subbed on because Turner comes off under a concussion rule. So Brent Harvey goes onto the ground in the third quarter. And a few minutes before the third quarter was completed, which is normally about the time you bring on your sub, they put Brent Harvey back in the red vest, put Turner on for 3 or 4 minutes and brought him off. Was that also just telling Brent that, you know, just hold your horses, mate?
Yeah, and before the game, Nahas was the late omission. Kane Turner comes in, so they could have elevated Boomer to the starting lineup. No, you got the Kermit jacket on.
That's a statement to say, hey, if you don't do what you're doing, you won't be playing.
And
what
let's about not forget, seven? Lindsay Thomas was also dropped in coming into this game. So it's the first time that I can recall in Brad's tenure that he's actually stood true to his word and made a very strong statement at the selection committee.
It's almost like he hasn't been there, you know, in the coach's box because of, you know, recovering from the back injury, surgery, and he's gone, I'm hearing some stuff I'm not liking.
Or he saw it from outside, from a different perspective.
And I'm sitting there going, I don't like that. And Brent Harvey's the example and going, I'm dealing with this. Yep. I'm not letting this fester. And that's good coaching.
Yeah, it is. Excellent coaching.
2 weeks ago, you would have thought that Brent Harvey was 100% chance to go on next year. I reckon that is more up in the air now. I'm not sure that Boomer Harvey is a lock to go on next year. I think it's going to be up in the air and up for him over the next 6 or 7 weeks.
One of the two parties will think it's a lock.
Boomer. Well, he wants to play.
I didn't say anything, Jay.
Absolutely. But I think that I'm with you, Treaders. I think this was a big statement from Brad Scott and something he hasn't done before.
And when we speak about this game, we mention the seven S's.
Continues to live and breathe.
Week.
People demand to know who it is, Brian.
The seven S's.
Well, just I ran in Adelaide and heard this, and I go, have they named this person yet?
What were they again?
Selfish, self-centred, self-serving.
Don't just pick out the headline. What were they?
House.
Yeah. Smug.
Sookie.
And you didn't reveal the identity of the AFL player who you thought...
if you were to warrant a guess, now the weekend's football is complete
We got some Twitter feedback where the person said, is it Boomer Harvey or Lindsay Thomas? And you just sort of went back into your corner
a little bit. I can rule out Boomer Harvey.
So possibly the other bloke has been dropped. Lindsay Thomas.
You haven't mentioned any other names.
S's. Lindsay.
Could be one of many others.
He's got some work to do.
The seven S's. No gain for Lindsay this week. Was intriguing in itself. Last night, gents, not many people would have woken up and perhaps seen what happened over in Perth last night with Adelaide travelling to Domain Stadium to take on the very, very good West Coast Eagles. Tredders was there. Jay, you're on top of it as well. But Tredders, from an emotional point of view, if you can just take us to Domain Stadium and give us a feel of what transpired last night.
No worries, BT. The only way I can, I suppose, relate it to anything I've seen is the John McCarthy game coming 6 months, 7 months later when Collingwood played Port Adelaide at the old footy park, Amy Stadium. And it was a situation where the Adelaide, and obviously living in Adelaide, it has been all-encompassing on this footy club. They've had nowhere to hide. Media wanting to ask them. Phil Walsh being laid to rest in a Catholic ceremony on Thursday, the day they left. So key officials getting flown in, getting private jets sent with family and friends to support them. And in only hindsight, you realise why so much was going. A lot of people, I knew Phil well for 9 years, was a coach of mine at Port Adelaide as an assistant and forwards coach. But the emotion at the end of the game was unbelievable. And I'm talking end and start. When Adelaide ran onto the field at Domain Stadium, West Coast, the whole crowd stood and clapped them in their warm-up. They clapped John Worsfold as he walked in his Adelaide Crows tracksuit for the first time, out of respect. Pre-game, a minute's silence. They did the official stuff there. Brilliant. Yeah, you know, people crying. And then after the match, they all locked hands like they did with Collingwood and Hawthorn just over a week ago. And there was not a dry eye. And to see some of the players, Taylor Walker, tears streaming from his face, Patrick Dangerfield, Daniel Talia, Sam Jacobs, the biggest players on the Adelaide list, the stars are there. It just proved that football, which a wonderful thing, can unite people. But it was probably the only 2 hours in the last week and a bit where they were able to focus on something other than Phil Walsh. And they were both physically exhausted from playing in a game. They got beaten by the West Coast Eagles, but mentally exhausted. And really, I just worry where the Adelaide Football Club can go to from here, because it took a huge toll on them last night. They were absolute men of great honour the way they went about it. And it was really a privilege to be there.
So I'm reluctant to say this, but there's got to be... Tredders, if you or Swatto or Jay-Z, we lose someone that's close to us in our family, and you know, we can take as long as we want personally to grieve over something. But when you're in a team professional sport, at some time there's got to be a sort of let's now
moving into the next
move
phase.
Forward and go forward. Am I reading that wrong? Should there be a time where someone puts up their hand and says, okay, guys, we've got to go this way now?
Well, the problem, the next challenge, they've got the memorial services on Wednesday, but then they've got Showdown. I mean, this is going to live and breathe. I was in Adelaide, I think you were in Adelaide too, on Thursday. The moment you get off the plane, unless you live in there, you really can't comprehend the enormity of what they've actually had to deal with and go through, and it was palpable. Once you got off the plane on Thursday, that it was still real, it was still very raw. And this is a city and a town and a people and two teams trying to come to terms with it. I don't know how they can begin to start to move forward. I don't know if that's right. I don't feel comfortable saying that.
No, but we know what you're saying.
But to continue to sort of work through that process, given the fact that they do have the memorial on Wednesday, they do have the Showdown the following week, and then they've got another home game, the Adelaide Crows, the week after that.
Gold Coast. And that's the worry, and that is the discussion that the club is having. And the club has some angst around this, because they're going, at some stage we need to respect Phil Walsh, give him his memorial and send-off, and he's had his personal Catholic ceremony and funeral. We need to give him a tribute. And it was a wonderful tribute on Thursday night by Port Adelaide and Collingwood, where they played lanterns and everyone turned their mobile phones out. It was an unbelievable moment. There was another one last night.
Continue the psychological treatment privately.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. But at some stage, this football club needs to move with him forward. You know what I mean? And not forget him. You play with him going forward, because, as you mentioned, Schwatter, Showdown next week. To play, if you haven't lived in Adelaide and understand a Showdown, it's just
massive.
It's the only game that worries for that round. And media all over it. Players can't escape. You go to the shops, you're trying to find out. So not only are players grieving, they're dealing with this. Then the following week, the Adelaide Football Club is the first home game since the tragic passing of Phil Walsh. So then do they do something else again? That's getting close to a month after the incident.
I think after the Showdown, it's time to get moving in a different direction and try
and escape the psychological warfare that must be going on in their own minds.
And from a coaching perspective, you wonder how firm or how hard can Campbell Reali and the boys be? Because the players, they must be brittle.
To a team decision on this, I'm sure.
And one thing they did do early in the week, though, with David Noble, their football manager, Campbell Reali, John Worsfold, set apart a plan. And their plan was, we need to continue on like Phil Walsh wanted, with elite standards. Even at the stage they got the runners out, they didn't play, did a bit of a fitness session. So from that aspect of preparation to a game, they've got that sorted. But after Wednesday, because none of the players were involved in the private ceremony, it was just family and friends and a couple of past players and close allegiances that Phil had, are able to do that. And then from Wednesday, they've almost got to hit the ground running and go, no, he would like nothing better than to smash Port Adelaide on the home deck.
The players right now, and then moving forward over the next week and a half, they want leadership. They'll do whatever they're told to do. It's almost as if they want the want the club.
Yep.
Tell us what we do. Tell us how we need to go about it. Just let us head in that direction. But that's got to come from the coach and the club.
And the game is the only escape they'll get.
Yep. Hey, just one thing that Tredder's mentioned there, Jay-Z, that I picked up just floating through there, was that, you know, if you haven't been to Adelaide, the showdown is the biggest thing in the world. Someone told Tredder that we have one of those every week. At least one.
Sometimes, we've got one in Tassie today.
Sometimes we have double and triple header showdown style operations in Melbourne, don't we?
We do. There's always a big game in Melbourne town.
Welcome to Sunday, Tredders. Welcome.
And continuing, it's a very delicate conversation, Tredders, but what's happening behind the scenes in terms of this football club has got to pick up and move on and find a new coach, and they have to do it, as we said before, quick, smart. Do you think those cogs in the background are starting to turn?
If they haven't, they will this week, because they have to, because they know there's another club in the market as well, and you don't want to be forced the hand by Carlton, and there might be other clubs. You know, there was a lot of speculation about Essendon and James Hurd in the last 48 hours. But they need to move forward with a plan, work out what they want, and then go and get their person. And I suspect it'll probably be someone, I think, this is my personal opinion, has to be someone like a Phil Walsh-Moll, someone experienced, someone to go through the journey to do this.
It's interesting because we just saw Simon Lloyd, who's a senior assistant coach here with Fremantle. They just came out on the ground here down in Launceston to have a look at the ground. And we all looked at Simon Lloyd and went, well, he's one of the potentials. He's on the list of 10 or so prospective coaches.
A front runner for the Carlton job, if you believe what you're sort of hearing behind the scenes.
And Tredd has raised the point that he's never played footy before. Does that harm him in any way? I mean, there's a lot of boxes you've got to tick, but that is one of the boxes. And we've seen Brennan McCartney recently, and we saw Wayne Britton at Carlton a decade or so back. What do you think, Swatty? Do you have to have played the game for the players to believe in you?
At the top level.
At the top level, yeah.
If to answer the question, if I had someone who hadn't played at that level and I had someone who has, I'm going to listen more, and I'm going to be more motivated from somebody who has previously played it before.
Schwarter, is it like that where we stage, you see someone who looks unbelievably well-prepared and someone who's unbelievably well-prepared, who's been a part of a premiership, either as a player, assistant coach, and knows what that system looks like? Is it like that?
Well, if somebody's asking me to do something, I'm respecting the person who has done it themselves.
Yeah.
What about Simon Lloyd? Let's say that he's 10 years on from where he is now and he's been an assistant for 15 years. He's seen what an elite base looks like. He understands how to put an elite program together. Does that give him any further? He's travelled the world and seen all of the elite sporting bodies do their best work. Does that then get him the gig?
Could.
If I was Carlton, I'd make him the boss of my development program, because he was such a guru with the kids at Fremantle and at Collingwood. So don't make him the senior coach, as we possibly just discussed. Just say, Carlton, we need some kids. We got nothing under 23 or only a few players. Get him to set up the elite junior system and you can take charge of that.
I think he's moved on from there. He did that in Fremantle. And now he's moved on to be a senior assistant.
He wants the top.
I think he's moved past that, Jay-Z. It was a bit like Alan Richardson. You know, best development coach in Australia when he was at Collingwood. I think he moved to Carlton. And he went past that development stage and now he wanted to try his hand at bigger job.
Is another important consideration, because we went through the period of Michael Voss, Nathan Buckley, and James Hurd. Three untried coaches. Out of the game, great players, but really kids when it comes to coaching. Not only coaching in your own right and spending time in the industry, learning and developing under, obviously, a good mentor, but what about life experiences? Because if you think about it, a Hurd, a Voss and a Buckley, they've got life experiences as players, but are we seeing a shift now back towards a mature coach who's done his time, who's got life experiences, because we've gone through a phase. If you use Port Adelaide as the example, they've had Dean Bailey, they've had Johnny McCarthy, and they've also had Phil Walsh. An untried coach is not normally experienced, not that anybody can be, but having life experiences outside of football because you're an older individual, oh, I get a feeling, Jay-Z, we're moving back towards that type of characteristic.
Right? I agree with you, Swatter, because look at the last couple that have been appointed, the last handful. Richardson, as BT touches on.
Long apprenticeship.
Long apprenticeship. Hinkley, long apprenticeship, premiership program. Walsh, long apprenticeship, premiership program. And then on the other side, Simpson, who's doing wonderful things at West Coast, but it's been a captain, leadership groups, went outside of his own club, which a lot don't do because it's a different, uncharted territory, into the best probably program we've seen the last 10 years, Hawthorn. All of a sudden, no coincidence for mine that he's doing well over there.
But you can't say someone like Simon Lloyd hasn't had life experiences. This is a mature man that has been all around the nation and got family and the whole thing. And he will have pushed a wheelbarrow at some stage in his life, and he will have driven a car at some stage in his life. He's had life experiences.
Not sure driving a car determines you're a good AFL player, though. Brian.
No, but you're talking about this, 40-year-old like he's been wrapped up in a teddy bear outfit all of his life.
How old when he got the job? Close to 50, late 40s. Mm. Alan Richardson, how old is Alan Richardson?
Richo's about 50.
Yeah, and Phil Walsh, 50. Early 50s.
50. So what about the hometown connection for Stuart Dew then? Like how strong is that, Treaders? Because he's the sort of the obvious one, isn't he?
The understanding is he's in the last three with Brendan Bolton, he and Phil Walsh, for when Phil Walsh got the job.
Now there's a man that's had life experiences.
So, who are you talking about?
Dewey, he's been around, hasn't he? Yeah,
can I just
three flags,
put another name
two
up?
Two as a player, one as a coach.
Yeah. Who's that?
Chris Fagan.
Knocked it out.
I mean, he's time in the industry, but his breadth of roles is pretty significant.
Now, this is where some get mixed up. I reckon someone like Chris Fagan, I don't know the guy at all, hardly, other than I've looked and admired what he's done. I reckon he knows and understands where he's at, and he's enjoying the role that he's in. I'm not sure that he wants to be above where he is. I reckon he does what he does really well. Did he?
I think he did, yeah.
Well, that'd be because what he does now he really enjoys and does it really well and understands that that's his level. That's where he can be the most productive of them all. Good win by the Kangaroos last night. Good game at Etihad Stadium. And Geelong, of course, are rebuilding their team and doing it in a very, very quiet but methodical manner. Weren't quite on the pace last night. North had all of the answers. Every time Geelong kicked a goal, North were able to respond immediately. That would have pleased the coach, Brad Scott, who joins us on the line now. Brad, appreciate your time. Congratulations on the win. By the way, I mentioned this last night. Are you ever going to sit down again? Because you just seem to be a standing machine.
Not by choice, Brian. No, I'm back to normal, mate. So I'm all clear from the surgeon. So I'm right to go again.
Back to normal, Brad. You were standing up in your press conference. That's not normal activity.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's just being a little bit ultra-cautious. But the 4 weeks being confined to watching us play on TV is enough forever for me. I never want to do that again. So I'm taking some precautions.
So, Brad, Treader's mentioned before that has that 4 weeks away made you sit back and take a different perspective on your club, and then all of a sudden you've realised there's one or two or three little things you don't like and you've come back in and addressed those?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt it's given me some time to think, and I think it's a bit of a lesson for me and probably the club, and in that we get so caught up in the week-to-week cycle of AFL footy, and you know, we work so hard sometimes it's beneficial to take a step back. Although it was an enforced layoff, I definitely had a chance to think of the bigger picture and, some philosophical things and the way we were approaching the game and coaching the game. And so hopefully it'll be a benefit. The second half of the year, the proof will be in the pudding.
Brad, congratulations on the win. 41 points over Geelong. You're 7-7 now and just outside the eight. But it was in the press conference afterwards that you really raised some eyebrows in regards to the little champion, Boomer Harvey, where you suggested that he hadn't been listening to you guys and was sort of going outside the normal team rules. And you're fiercely protective of your players, I know, but this is one of the few times you actually sort of gave them a bit of a bake from my perspective. Did it come out the way you were aiming? Is that what you meant by those comments?
Oh no, certainly the comments are right, but I should clarify the what I meant by Boomer. Certainly not not listening to my words, and then, you know, perhaps he, you know, I needed some action to convince him of what we needed. It was, look, his intent is fantastic, and Boomer, Andrew Swallow, probably Drew Petrie, I put in the same category in that they have felt and certainly taken some of the criticism that's been levelled at them and at us personally. And when we're under pressure as a team, they've tried to put the team on their shoulders and carry us forward. And Boomer's been doing that for a decade. And we just can't be a team that relies on our 37-year-old champion to put the team on his shoulders and carry us forward and try to win the game. And, you know, I think he's listened to those comments before, but, you know, hopefully there's proof to him now that he can play as a sub role and, you know, really play his role for the team, and we can still kick 120 points and defend well. So, you know, it's certainly nothing, you know, he hasn't been disobeying instructions, but he's been trying to do what he's been doing for the last 20 years, when really now we just need him to play his role for the team.
Brad, is it a case, Warren Treadray here, is it a case of the bloke is that keen to do well? I'm perceiving this as maybe it breaks apart your structure and holds you back a little because he's so keen to be the best. Is that what you're thinking?
Oh, there's no doubt about that, Treaders. You know, when we've been under pressure, Boomer's been so good. And look, more often than not, he actually does it. But, I mean, it's not, you know, we talk about, you know, consistency of effort and consistency of performance. And it's very difficult for us to be a consistent team if we're relying on Boomer's brilliance. You know, we know he's going to be brilliant at different stages, but we need him to be consistent in his approach so that, you know, his 21 teammates on the day know exactly what we're going to get. And, you know, brilliance is great, but it's got to be within the parameters of the way we want the team to play.
Brad, is it already settled in your mind that Boomer will play again at North Melbourne next year, or is that a decision you're yet to reach?
No, we're yet to reach that decision, but that hasn't been unusual. The process we followed over the last 5 or 6 years is we wait until, you know, quite late in the season, and then we have a look at the available evidence and how Boomer's feeling, how he's training, how he's performing, and then make a decision. So that'll be exactly the same. Look, I think he's been quoted as saying that if he feels, in September like he does now, then he'd be keen to play on. And from my perspective, if he keeps playing the role for the team that we need him to play, and his body's good, then he should play on.
Hey, Brad. Really, really disappointing performance last week against the Gold Coast, and appreciate your openness with regards to the decision to start Boomer as a stub. But part of the thinking during the course of the week, Lindsay Thomas was relegated to the VFL. You started Boomer as a sub. Was part of the thinking behind the decisions for those two players to send a really strong message to the rest of the playing group that no one's off limits?
No, that certainly wasn't my intention. I've never been a big believer in making statements at selection, but you do select a side based on performance and what's best for the team. And, you know, Lindsay, by his own admission, has been down on his form, and he hasn't been upholding the way, you know, we want him to play. But he is a fierce competitor, and I know he's really resilient, and he'll respond and come back and play some really good footy for us in the second half. So even though they're named players, I suppose, you know, we picked the side based on performance, and we couldn't wait to get Taylor Garner into the side. Injury's been the only thing keeping him out, and Kane Turner's a fierce little competitor too. So, when Lindsay and performs like that at VFL level, he'll get his spot back, no doubt.
Talking about blokes going in and out of the side, Brad, Magic Dor only come in for the one game and was subbed out of the ground. He's been developing at your footy club for a few years now, and you're going to make a decision on him at the end of the year. Is he playing for his footballing future at the moment? Do you feel that he's up to AFL standard?
Well, he certainly shows that. It's Jay, is it?
Yes, it is, Scott.
Yeah, Jay. He certainly shows at VFL level that he's capable, and that's why he was selected to play last week. He you know, is knocking the door down in terms of kicking goals and performing. But unfortunately for him, it's a really cutthroat industry. And, you know, he got his opportunity at the Gold Coast and he was unable to grasp it. And Ben Brown went back to the VFL and performed. So I think, you know, while I said before we don't make statements at selection, I think the message the players get is that come in, perform, you stay in. But if you don't perform, then there'll be pressure from underneath. And look, we've made over 14 changes to our team this year. I heard someone tell me that there was a stat that we've only debuted one player Well, that's because 39 players on our AFL list have played senior footy.
That was me. That was pretty bad.
I knew it was you, Bart. 39 players on our list have played AFL footy, and our three draftees have had season-ending surgery. So there's not many left to play. So we're fortunate in that we've got good depth on our list, and you know, with that comes, you know, pressure of performance and pressure to be selected.
Just keep in mind, Brad, I don't have all the answers, mate.
No, I was aware of that.
Got to fill 4 hours.
Brad, how are you seeing the captaincy at the moment? In your absence, there's been a big public push for Jack Siebel, but we saw Andrew Swallow, the skipper, play some outstanding footy at the moment. Is that up in the air for you at all, that Andrew Swallow's the man to lead this club sort of moving forward the next season or two, or do you feel that Jack Siebel is ready to sort of contend for that title?
Oh, look, we certainly hope that we've got a number of players, not only Jack, who are going to push forward. Look, Andrew's, you know, led us through a period where, you know, Adam Simpson first handed over the captaincy to Brent Harvey, and then Brent handed it over to Andrew. And the first thing, you know, I spoke to Andrew Swallow about was making sure that he was grooming his successor, because I think I'm a big believer in handing over captaincy while, you know, the current captain is still playing, so that he can transition the next guy through. So, you know, it was always our intention for Andrew to hand over the captaincy while he was still playing at North, and that'll happen at some point. Whether it's next year or not, we'll have to assess at the time.
Appreciate your time, Brad. Just one last one before you go. You were aggressive last night. I mean your team by saying that. Led by Jared White, best example perhaps, became a tackling machine, became a running machine, and that permeated through the team. There was definitely an aggressive North Melbourne on show last night.
Yeah, there was, Brian. I thought Jared Waite played his best game in North Melbourne colours, primarily because of his defensive pressure. And, you know, to be quite honest, you know, we needed and expected that sort of performance after our display last week.
Interesting your comment last night post-match about, you know, the alleged chicken wing tackle, because it didn't look too good for people who didn't see the game. We've seen the vision this morning. Was it a little bit, you know, protecting a player, because it didn't look good? It looked very Chris Judd-like.
Oh, look, my point is that we're all coaching players to pin the arm these days, and, you know, the vision that Brian showed me after the game, you know, Selwood didn't know where the ball was. He had the arm pinned and he kept pinning it. I mean, you know, well, look, there are people who will adjudicate what happened there better than I, but, you know, I didn't think a lot of it, and I spoke to Sam Wright, and he didn't think much of it either. So if there was injury, well, something needs to be done about it. But there wasn't, and we have no concerns.
Jake Batrick has just tweeted me, Brad, and he hashtag standing desks. Go and have a look at that, because there's a chair that's sort of in the half, three-quarter upright, and it would be absolutely perfect for your coit at the moment. So do yourself a favour and get one hold of one of those. We appreciate your time.
No worries, boys. Appreciate it.
Talking about Brent Harvey.
Yeah, we were. What that would say to me, Jay-Z, in regards to the comments from Brad, is that Boomer, as most of us as players, treaders, always want to be on the ground, always want to be in the thick of the action. But that message said a lot to me in regards to, hopefully Boomer now understands that the importance of his role could be a mixture of on the ground, starting on the ground, but also importantly, if you want to finish the rest of the year and maybe next year, there'll be a role, but that role could be as a substitute.
Yeah,
so getting your head around that as a revered figure at that football club is something that, you know, as you get older, you don't want to let go of the fact that I used to be the number one man, but maybe now I've got to accept I'm not.
Every good player is selfish.
Yep.
Right? But it's how much selfishness rubs off on the others. And that sounds to me, and read between what you're saying, Schwatter, is that it's been floated with him. He hasn't liked it. He still wants to be the main midfielder. He's no longer the main man there, but probably, and we've all got an ego, probably finds a little bit hard to deal with. Reality says, the coach says, you're not what you were. You've still got a valuable role going forward, but you need to embrace that. If you don't, you put yourself at risk, and that's what we've seen by him going as a sub.
So I see no guarantee now, given the fact that this sub role appears to be Brent Harvey's, no guarantee beyond this year, because we're only into round 15, and there's a lot of football left in this year, and you're not going to play a sub as a sub for a year and a half.
And he's got his 400th coming up in 2 weeks, so it
not
would
in a red vest,
be
sure.
Ideal to be running out in a Kermit suit. We know the players don't like that.
I think you're allowed to take it off before you go through the banner and then put it back on.
The fierce competitor that we know Burma is, I think he wouldn't want to be subbed for that game. But that's exactly what Treaders was just talking about. I think he'd be the perfect sub.
Well, Robert Harvey embraced it. I reckon he got an extra 2.5 years out of his career.
Well, with his kicking, you know, his versatility, you can play him on the back, on the wing, up forward. He's kicking, obviously. So from Scotty's perspective, you can really understand where he's coming from. Where my ears really pricked up, boys, is when he made the reference to the defensive stuff. He said, Boomer's got to do the team roles and do all the defensive stuff. We know he is a brilliant offensive player, but was there a little needle there? Did I detect a little needle?
He did, and also if you join that with the comments about Jared Waite, and he said the best part of his game last night was the defensive part and was the non-negotiable part, and I think Jared Waite had been read that act as well, the same act that Boomer was on, and I reckon he was on one of his last chances last night if he did not follow through with that, given the fact he had 6 or 7 enormous tackles and a lot of pressure.
I think we don't really get the fact, everyone outside of, and I've been out of the system 4.5 years, you realise how much defensive means, but you forget about it because you think about the offensive side of the game. Now, if you don't defend, doesn't matter who you are, you're gone.
Well, he's played his career as a forward flank and been one of the best in the business for the past decade, but this year we've seen him play on a lot on the back flank. And, you know, instinctively, he's just going to hunt the footy and use the peel. So I don't think that defensive stuff comes to Boomer as instinctively as other players. So I wonder whether there's just in the background a bit of reinforcement that, Brent, if you do want to play next year, if you do want to break Michael Tuck's record, etc., and it would be a great boost for the club, then you have to stick to these defensive commitments.
A good start would be anyone that's not in a blue and white jumper and they've got the footy and he's standing by himself, get him.
Yep.
Just go and stand next to him.
Don't chicken wing him.
And don't chicken wing him, but defend him. Not only does he have to defend, but he has to exude that he is loving to do that for the team so the team follows him, because he's still very much a leader in that club, doesn't he? It has to rub off. Other people in his team have to see that and go, wow, if Boomer's doing that, we're going real good.
Like Daniel Jun Siracusa last year for the Bullies. I think he was subbed 14, 15, 16 times.
Yeah, like a coach.
But he was like a coach. He was getting mic'd up, all those little bits and pieces that don't matter, but living and breathing every single moment, and his legs couldn't probably take him towards 100, 120 minutes, but he was doing everything as much as he could.
Treader made a really good point before, and that is the really good players, great players, are selfish. And they're good because there's a strong element of being selfish. And Boomer, and this is not being disrespectful by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been selfish, which has allowed him to be so good for so long. And he no longer can afford to be that selfish. And BT's point is on the money as well. The challenge has been put to Boomer Harvey, and every player that's played for a long time is given the opportunity to readdress where they sit within the pecking order. We'd love to still think that we're number one, but Boomer's not number one, and Brad made it very clear. We don't want him to be number one right now. Moving forward, we need Boomer to play the role, and if Boomer can embrace it and show that the defensive side of the game is important, what that will do, that will give a tremendous lift to the rest of the playing group that, hey, he's put his own individual needs and wants beside or to the side for a moment, and it's about the betterment of the group.
Classic example of that was the team we're going to see today in Hawthorn. Made that decision with their game style. Forward line was no longer about Buddy Franklin. They got 60 goals out of him. They got 60 out of Roughhead, Rioli, Gunston, all these blokes. And that's where the game is at right now. And if North Melbourne and Boomer Harvey think that he still is the main man, at what?
37.
He's my age. He's turning 37. He got issues. Because when he goes, how many teams have we seen? And he started an era where the best players play well, you win. Now, they play well, it helps you win. But if you're not on defensively and everyone comes to play in your defensive aspect of your game, you're stuffed.
What is a big talking point? Let's have a listen to what Brent Harvey said this morning on Channel 7 Game Day about starting as the sub.
The conversations that I had with Brad during the week was, when things ain't going right for our team, I'll probably try to try too hard and do things outside my role. And we've seen Lindsay Thomas got dropped during the week and I was made sub. Like you said, it's not a punishment, but it sort of half is. So we just spoke about playing my role regardless of the scoreboard, just going out there and making sure that I fulfil my role for that team. And on Wednesday when he told me, I embraced that role and I thought I played it pretty well, and just wanted to really execute that role as good as I possibly could. And I was like another coach on the bench, and I was walking up with the guys, telling them what I could see on the ground. It was a little bit different, don't get me wrong, but it was fine.
So do you, hearing that this morning on game day, do you think he's accepting of the role?
Filthy, hates it. I reckon he wants to start on the ground. No, he said all the right things. And as the point about Daniel Jansen-Kew's user was a good one from you, Traders, because he can coach out there. But there will be an interesting decision made on his future, and he spoke about that as well.
If the Kangaroos came to you and said, here's another contract, would you sign it immediately?
Oh, absolutely.
You want to go again?
Oh, in my mind and my body, I'm feeling fantastic, especially today after playing 25 minutes last night. But, absolutely. I think my football's still holding up and I still love the game. As soon as I lose that passion, I know it's time, but I've still got that passion for it.
Was that a little sort of reverse drive-by?
Oh, I hope they've got a good relationship being the coach.
Just a little reverse drive-by, 25 minutes?
All I play. Oh, well, I think you're 14, reading too much into it. But
14 possessions in that 25 minutes, so that's good. That's a possession every year. Yep.
He gave them what a sub needs to give the team when he comes on. Shut up! The footy's on Triple M! Triple M rocks football.